What is up? It's Dakota Layden here from Destination Fear, and you are listening to the Paranomaly Zone.
A ghostly apparition in the dark of night.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Nick, do you ever get that feeling that the audio podcast gods are against us?
I think they are gods that are evil.
The audio gods are evil.
Yeah, well, there are evil gods, I'm sure.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Like the bad side.
The bad side of... Now, are you talking gods in general, or are you talking merely podcasting gods?
Yeah, I'd have to be podcasting gods, I guess.
Ah. Now,
that's
why,
what we deal with.
Now, why would... I throw that question out there. Some listeners may be wondering. Well, I've had it up to here, right?
Yeah.
Up to here. I'm raising my hands so high that it's not even in the screen anymore.
You started putting your hand up to your bald spot, and then you raise it up higher.
My bald spot. Yeah, that you can somehow see through my hat that I have on right now, right? Yeah.
That's right.
See, but anyway. the old sensitive Patrick wouldn't have let that slide by, Mike.
No, definitely
quite
not.
So easily. the old Patrick would spend about 5-10 minutes ranting and raving and defending himself.
Yeah, saying, and you'd be sensitive,
Mike,
overly sensitive for the next 3 days, but go ahead. Damn it, Mike, what?
Damn it, Mike. You know damn well I don't have a flamingly obvious bald spot.
No, you don't.
It's 47 years old, and there's a lot less hair back there than I wish there was. You know, so it is what it is, right?
It is.
Just so listeners know, if I'm yelling into the microphone, I apologize. It's because I cannot hear myself. Quite literally, I cannot hear myself. Well, I can hear a muffled version. I hear Mike just fine. So we'll deal with that. I'm attempting to use my Blue Yeti that I purchased, going on 2 summers ago. That is proven to be a complete failure. But we are utilizing the Zoom recording software right now. Hopefully this audio isn't too terrible, but we are back, Mike. It seems like it's been forever.
Yes, and you make me feel like guilty about my Yeti working so well.
Don't feel guilty. Feel proud. No. Feel happy.
Oh, I still need the plug-in for it, but...
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, that's true. I am happy.
We are sitting here. It is Sunday, April 14th, 2024. It's getting close to the anniversary of the Titanic sinking. For all you Titanic aficionados out there, myself included in that one. So, I mean, I don't... stay up and follow it minute to minute, and like, oh, right at this precise time at 2:20 in the morning the Titanic sank.
You don't
like know trivial stuff like that. But it is good to see you, Mike. It's been a while. The last time we recorded, I sounded like I was living inside about 28 trash cans. Hopefully I sound like I'm living inside only 4 or so today. But again, you sound great.
Okay,
so it's good to see you. I hope you're ready to go. Hope you're firing on all podcasting cylinders.
I think so.
We got a creepy case to discuss today for sure. Infamous in the paranormal community. I am referring to the Doris Bitter case. For those not familiar, look up the movie The Entity. Look up the book The Entity. It's not for the faint of heart for sure. We have mentioned this, I believe, several times on prior episodes, but we've never gotten around to having a fairly focused episode on this case. But we definitely have our thoughts. We'll give you the rundown of what happened in California back in 1974 to the unfortunate Doris Bither. We're just going to call her Doris because we've heard different pronunciations of her last name. And we don't want to offend anybody by mispronouncing her last name. So we're just going to say Doris. I don't think we can mispronounce Doris, or can we?
I don't think so.
You had to think about that for a second.
I did have to think about it, but I tried to, in my mind, I tried to do it like a three or four times different ways, but there's no way.
No way. Give us a few minutes. I'm sure we can do it somehow.
If you spelled it backwards, maybe. Well, that's wrong.
Oh, man. Yeah. that Sirad. Sirad.
Sounds like something from Star Trek.
Kind of, it does.
It is Sirad from the planet Yakalon.
Exactly.
The third
That's going to be a good discussion. We're going to be focusing on, as I said, the entity case, the Doris Bither case, Doris's case. We have some ghost gab, got some good conversation for that. Moments of the macabre / haphazard horror. I can't help myself. I always have to say macabre.
Yeah. I think you should pull back from your mic just a little bit. You're burning my ears out. No, you're burning my ears out. You're just kind of loud.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I can't tell if Mike is being facetious or what.
No,
but,
no, I'm being seriously facetious.
Jesus. That was a clever line. That was clever.
Yeah,
that was
and I just pulled it right out of my brain, and I didn't even think about it first.
Yeah, so now you're done for the rest of the episode because you pulled one thing out of your brain. So now you're like you're melting and you've made your contribution and now it's finito for Mike.
I have reached my maximum ability of whatever. See, I can't even. Yeah, see, it's gone. It's gone. I can't. But yeah, you are quite loud in my ear.
Come on. See, now I'm paranoid. We've been recording for about 5, 6, 7 minutes, and now I'm worried that I'm going to be blasting our listeners' ears out.
No, you sound very clear.
Okay. Dang it, Mike. You're flustering me. Mike does this on purpose. He knows I'm already flustered by the audio trials and tribulations I've been going through.
And to add to that, it's very dangerous.
Podcast. Yeah. Well, I will try to calm down. I will talk in my high-pitched soothing nasal voice.
Your sultry, dulcet Patrick voice.
That, for those wondering, that was not me. That was me. And again, it is good to see you. We are back. For those of you new to the program, believe it or not, we do get new listeners on occasion. Welcome. We hope you stick around and enjoy the podcast. This is, of course, your weekly dose of all things. Hey, you guessed it. Paranormal, strange, and mysterious. My name is Patrick Koffenberg, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host with the ghosts, the paranormal poster boy himself, the overly generous and getting frighteningly close to the side of Jesus, Mr. Mike Cardino. The reason I said that, those two introductions kind of, not two introductions, two descriptions.
I want to hear.
Well, the overly generous, you can never be overly generous, by the way. But I said that because your prize package for devoted listener Angela Don arrived this weekend. It seems like Angela was pretty happy with the products you sent her, collectibles. I don't even know what you sent her.
I know. I was going to send you pictures of each one, but it would have taken too long.
So it would have taken too long because you wouldn't know how to send me photos?
It would have taken too long to get each photo sent to you.
I see. I understand.
Because
there was so much included.
Yes. I took many different objects from... Different objects from my many different collections, I should say. I collect a lot of different things, as you know. The paranormal things, my whatevers, a lot of things. I sent her some really neat stuff. I hope she enjoys the Chris Jericho package that I sent her. The figure, the sports card and the totally autographed by all the band members of Fozzy CD. I hope she likes that. I thought she might.
I'm sure. Very cool, man. Very, very cool. Yes.
She's like a big wrestling fan, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're big fans of Mr. Jericho. So, yeah, thank you again, Angela, for tuning in. We hope that you have stuck around and listened to the podcast throughout these past weeks. Things have been kind of, well, been in a kerfuffle a bit.
Kerfuffle, yes.
We're forging forth. This is our first flagship episode for the month of April. We will have one more released before April is through and two additional Patreon episodes coming your way. So it will be great. Now, the other reason I described you, Mike, as the frighteningly close.
Ooh, scary.
Man of Jesus. Which I think would be awesome if you were, by the way. But I've noticed that you seem to be having a few more, how do I want to say it? Not religious, not Christian.
Angelic moments?
Well, not even angelic no. moments. Well, moments of your faithful reflection, maybe. Reflections on your faith, I'll put it that way.
Well, I'm getting old, you know.
I know. So
my mortality is really sinking in.
So, okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, so you're one of the bandwagon jumping Christians is what you're saying.
No, I was just kidding about that. I've got a long, long, long time left to live.
And Mike sent me a text about a movie he watched last night called Heaven is Real, and he highly recommended that.
Heaven is for real, yes. It's
Heaven is for real.
Awesome movie.
I just visited you last week. I noticed you have some Christian quotes on, you know, hanging from the walls, and it's just you've come a long way because you used to be Jesus.
All I see is the day the earth stood still poster, and I see George hanging comfortably behind me.
Hey, George.
But go ahead.
No. I kid, of course. Mike has never hated one soul in his entire life, least of all the man known as Jesus. You've always loved what he has stood for, his messages, he's all about spreading love and respecting others, and you've always respected that.
Yes, so, absolutely. I'm definitely not religious. I mean, Mary and I have talked about going to church sometime, a church that she really enjoyed going to a long time ago. Have I found the Jesus? Have I found the Jesus? I have.
Are you asking me?
No, I'm saying I have found a lot of faith and a lot that goes along with that. And it's been very, very wonderful and interesting. And it's a journey that my wonderful wife, Mary, and I are going on together, and we shall see what happens.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's great, man. And of course, you know, I was kidding in all manner, so don't get offended.
No, and it doesn't mean that I'm changing my way of what I am on the podcast or what I am in life or anything. You know, I'll be just as, well, I'll try to be just as, well, I'm the trying
no, just don't say
to
it.
Be
don't
the
say
trying
it.
To be funny thing. I'll do my best still with that. And, you know,
well, Mike, you know, I'm 47. You're a wee bit older than that. You know, if we
61.
Haven't changed our ways, if we haven't changed our ways by now, guess what? We never are, because that's just not who we are.
Correct.
Let's start off with some ghost gab.
Yeah.
We're going to talk seasonal hauntings. Now, why do I bring this up, you may ask? Well, the other day I was perusing the Sally House website, and I was looking at some of the pricing as far as renting the house overnight. Essentially, same cost throughout the year, except there's a spike in the renting price during the quote-unquote haunted season, that being
yes.
the months of September and October. And that sparked a little thing of thought, a thing of thought in thing my of mind. Thought.
I need to write a that
thing
down.
Of thought. Yeah, I like that. I like that. A feeble little thing of thought was sparked in my brain. I was like, hey, you know what? Maybe Mike and I can talk about that possibility. Do you, Mike, believe in the possibility that hauntings, however you want to describe a haunting / paranormal activity, kind of, I don't know, is dependent upon the season? Spikes in activity arise during, let's say, July, only to sink to a near non-existent level in November. What have you? Any such things? What do you think about this possibility of the seasons affecting paranormal activity, whether it be inside one's house or some other infamous haunted locale? What say you? Let's banter a bit about that.
Well, the first thing I think of, especially with places that you can go visit and stay at, like the Sally House, boy, it's nice to make more money, you know.
And amen.
Throw out a couple of months there that you make more money, you know, getting ready for the Christmas season so you can buy more presents and crap like that. But then I also think, you know, well, the Halloween thing is a, you know, it's huge, and they could be, you know, capitalizing on that a bit. But then again, I think also, you know, Halloween is not just a candy gathering jaunt of children dressed up as whatever. It is actually an ancient pagan season, or whatever you want to call it, or not a holiday. Pagans go on holiday at Halloween. But anyway,
how do we pronounce it again, Mike? This will drive your niece nuts. Isn't it Samhain?
Samhain or something like that.
That was directly for your lovely niece Rachel. So
yes,
I hopefully she enjoys. Does she still listen? I don't blame her if she doesn't. But I'm just curious.
I haven't heard lately, but I hope so. Yeah.
I don't think your brother listens anymore either. I haven't heard anything from him.
Well, you know, I don't know. We've been kind of slumping for a while.
We're totally selling the podcast here. I get it, but
yeah.
But again, getting back to seasonal hauntings, kind of, you know, wavering back and forth dependent upon the time of year. If that is possible, why would that be possible? Is that due to perhaps maybe some? I don't want to sound cliched and say some catastrophic event happened in April, like the Titanic sinking, you know, as an example. So therefore, every April on the surface of the Atlantic Ocean, that very near the locale of the Titanic wreck, maybe perhaps some more odd lights are seen on the surface of the ocean, you know, maybe some odd weather anomalies occur. You kind of get where I'm going on that. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to say something like that could be a residual haunting that, you know, at certain times, things like that happen.
Yeah, for sure, 100%. I don't know, like, I know one of our bucket list destinations is to get to, like, Gettysburg, you know, and check.
Oh, yeah.
Check out the history, let alone the alleged paranormal activity that has gone on there, just to visit it, pay our respects.
I don't think you could go there without experiencing something unless you're totally closed off to the idea.
That's a good possibility. Yeah. You know, but let's say certain hauntings, I'm doing that in air quotes, certain hauntings, certain experiences when one visits Gettysburg are more active during certain times, you know, like let's say when a certain battle went down. Is that when year after year after year people experience alleged paranormal activity? Again, that kind of goes back to the residual. Would it be possible for it to be an intelligent haunting interacting with visitors? Does it have something to do with the land? I mean, any possibilities. The point of Ghost Gab, Mike, is just to throw ideas back and forth. I mean, does the idea of seasonal haunting sound silly to you?
No, not really. I mean, during the Halloween season and that, and getting close to it, and even close to the holiday season, there's a lot of energy put out, and there's a lot of energy put out, you know, before Halloween, getting ready for Halloween, you know, everything, the kids, whatever rituals, whatever sect does during that time, you know, there's a lot of energy put out, and maybe that has something to do with it, possibly. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just throwing out an idea.
Yeah, I like that. I like that idea. I mean, and what is one of those energies, what is a common energy that is thrown out there that is conjured, perhaps, or created, I should say, by us silly humans during the Halloween season? Well, of course, it's fear. It's being creeped out. It's right. All things spooky, you know, and maybe there's maybe we are all creating this kind of aura of, you know, the psychic energy almost is laid out there, put out there in the ether, so to speak, by us. And therefore, that in itself kind of maybe perhaps increases paranormal activity. We're conjuring it up by our state of mind.
And actually, too, an entire month of horror movies in October. I'm sure that does a lot.
That's two syllables. Two syllables, boys and girls. Horror. Horror.
Yes.
Just to be clear.
Yeah.
Just to be clear. So... Well, we already got our first countdown, the warning to take a quick time traveling excursion in a couple moments. Mike, any final thoughts on Ghost Gab before we take our first break here and return with the Doris Byther case? I'm sorry, everybody, but any final thoughts on the potential of seasonal hauntings?
I think there's a possibility that seasonal hauntings is an actual thing, and hey, anything's possible, hey, as you know.
Quick and concise. Quick and concise, as Mike is known to be. He's actually his nickname in high school was Concise Carbno.
Yes.
So, it was Casper. It was Concise Casper.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I feel very anticlimactic about this whole Ghost Gab session, but I think it was a nice short little dipsy doodle around the ring there.
Well, again, obviously, shockingly, we don't have an answer. We don't have an answer to anything that we cover. I mean, we do not claim to be experts on anything. We are fascinated with all things paranormal, and we like talking about them in a casual manner. Sometimes a little more than casual, but
And actually,
you throw ideas off of each other and see what sticks.
Right. And actually, us as you and I, as what for what we do, and our love of actual ghost hunting. I mean, the entire year is a season for us.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for bringing that up too. You know, we have just a few minutes left. As I mentioned earlier, I did visit you last week with the intent of going on another cool paranormal ghost hunt excursion. But of course, as we mentioned on our YouTube video, well, the weather hates us, and apparently it's in cahoots with the audio podcasting gods, because the weather never helps.
It was windier than hell. If I would have put a tail and string onto Patrick, I would have flown him like a freaking kite.
I would have been lost. Yeah, we were visiting one cemetery, and I almost literally got... Well, Mike was laughing, guffawing heartily at my flimsy little waif-like body taken away in the wind. Mm-hmm. But we ended up just kind of doing some stuff at your place. I have to say, I haven't even gotten around to finishing the audio we recorded at the cemeteries, Mike, because what little I did listen to, shockingly, almost unlistenable due to the wind.
Yeah, it sounded like wind.
It was just, that's all it was wind. And you'd hear us talking every now and then. And I did, however, get to go up into your attic. So,
Yes, you did.
Yeah, and there's a fascinating clip of me doing such thing, crawling up into Mike's crawl space. Posted on the Patreon page. It's about 59 seconds of glorious video content. of me being swallowed up by Mike's attic. So it's,
yeah, it was dirty, dusty up there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very dirty, dusty. Yeah, that's like a 70s. That sounds like a 70s rock band.
dirty, dusty. Or a porn movie. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Fine. You just can't stay clean, can you, Mike? You have to reference it.
Boy, that dirty, dusty. Boy, I'd like to have a piece of that. Anyway, go ahead.
I got nothing. It's time for us to take a time traveling excursion to refresh our feeble minds, and we shall return and talk about the entity case, the allegedly true terrifying case of Miss Doris Bither and what she endured. Mike, hold on to your hats. Hopefully you don't lose any clothes during this time traveling excursion.
Yes, we'll be good.
Okay, sounds good. Hold on, boys and girls. This will be seamless. And we have returned from yet another successful time traveling excursion. Of course, we could not get through said time traveling excursion without Mike butchering the English language just to get under my skin. Yes, you use the word botan during our time traveling excursions, and you do that on purpose.
But it's a real word that is in the dictionary.
Well, that dictionary needs to be burned because...
Well, you talked to old Daniel Webster about that yourself.
Is that his first name, Daniel?
I think so.
Is it?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Sounds good to me if it is.
You didn't know that? I thought you would have known that.
No, no. Contrary to popular belief, I am not a smart man.
Except when it comes to presidents and who was president when and
blah 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 blah, blah. And I have to correct myself too. That is not popular belief either. Anywho's enough bashing and putting ourselves down. It's time to dive into some real creepy stuff, Mike. Were you familiar? Now, be honest. Were you familiar with this case before the movie The Entity came out?
No, I don't believe so. Well, I must have been, because the film came out in, what, 82?
Yeah, well, early 80s.
83 here, but I think it released in 82 in Europe.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, that's right. Frank DiFelita.
Easy for you to say. Yeah. This movie, though, it was, I know when I first saw the movie, I was traumatized by this.
Yeah.
You know, and then later on when you learn that this was supposedly based on true events, even more traumatizing, and you just feel for this poor woman. If this really went down, how unbelievably horrifying.
Absolutely.
Generally speaking, for those who aren't familiar, but if you're listening to a paranormal podcast, you probably are. The Doris case, again, I don't want to keep mispronouncing her last name, is alleged to revolve around unbelievably violent sexual assaults upon this poor woman. Recurring assaults.
Yeah, but there is so much more that went on.
Yes.
You know, like the kids were affected, and they'd been seeing a ghost of an old man in the house, I believe, even. And it's crazy.
You know, and there was a paranormal investigation into this case back in the day. There are, again, I'm going to overuse this word, alleged photos of paranormal captures from Doris's house. Some really weird light anomalies captured on camera. Again, I mean, are they evidence? Well, no, they aren't. But when taken with the words of the eyewitnesses, when taken with the case itself, you have to wonder. It's like, what was captured on those cool old cameras back in the day? I mean, those light anomalies were kind of spooky looking.
Yeah, they were. They were interesting. Like arcs of light. Yeah.
Arcs of light, ultra bright. Not really explained by any sort of camera defect. You know, it's something that can't easily be pushed aside by the pseudo skeptics. You know, it's like, right. Well, okay, if this if this is a camera defect, then explain it to me. And you know, doesn't usually work that way. It's not easily explainable. So
there was one really, really good picture of her. She was sitting, it was kind of dark and her eyes were closed. I mean, she looked, you know, kind of creepy the way it was. And it was a Polaroid and it had scratches across her face, and which looked very, you know, like, oh, that's weird. But they said it was probably scratched coming out of the instant camera, the Polaroid.
The camera itself scratched the image is what you're saying.
I used to have one of those in the 70s in that you take the picture and the picture pops out and you got to wait for it to.
Yeah, you shake it a bit.
Yeah, you shake it and develops. And oh, yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. Anyway, yeah.
Is there anything else you want to share?
Oh, no, I'm fine. Back to the story.
Well, I'm looking at some of my references here and I'm choosing which one to start with. One of these is fairly interesting because it suggests that Doris, perhaps through no fault of her own, but through the nefarious ways of those damn Ouija boards, Mike, might have actually started all of this traumatic haunting. I don't necessarily buy that, but you never know. Mike is right now being attacked by his own invisible ghost. I don't know what's happening. He's off screen. Oh, I just read his lips. He said, "My dog." He said,
so. "Yeah, okay." I think she's done. Yeah.
Okay, and okay. You're referring to your dog, not Mary. Mary's not driving you nuts.
No, never. Okay, absolutely not.
Okay.
So what was the last thing he said? Because I was going to comment on it, and I totally lost it in my head when the dog started barking.
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, but you know the film, you know, loosely interpretation of the what really happened, and it said that what really happened in the house actually was even more horrifying things that happened and whatever. Yeah. But
well, and the film itself has received tons of criticism. It's really divided the paranormal community, I should say, as to how potential paranormal activity was portrayed. A lot of people think the movie was very exploitive as far as like kind of unnecessary scenes that were shot featuring Barbara Hershey, and others who are saying, well, you know, it is necessary to try and convey the awful truth that she went through. You know, the viewers have to see this. You know, it wasn't exploitive by any means. It was just portraying what is, again, her truth.
Right.
So there's both sides of the fence on that one. You know, you have to, I recommend you go watch the movie yourself and decide for yourself.
It is a horrifying movie. And when you, how old were you when you saw it? Do you remember? Were you?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I was pretty young, so pretty impressionable.
Yeah.
I don't know why the hell I was watching it.
Well, I wasn't that young.
I think it was on Cinemax or something. I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I think I saw it like on HBO or something, but
yeah.
But when I saw it, I was an adult and it was a freaky movie to watch. And the actual rape scene that they had on the movie was terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely God, yeah. Terrifying.
Ugh. And you can't imagine this being truth, but again, it possibly is. And so it's enough to send shivers down your spine for sure.
Yeah. And actually think of this. Is there something like this going on right now that we haven't heard about yet that might be even worse?
Right.
You know?
I don't like that.
In the making.
I don't like that thought.
Yeah. me neither.
As mentioned earlier, this is the Doris Bither case. Occurred in Southern California, Culver City, to be precise, in the early 1970s. We mentioned the movie based on the book written by Frank DeFelitta, published in 1978. Defalita's book detailed the purported experiences of Doris. Doris claimed to have been battered and raped repeatedly by unseen forces, ghosts, or demons, intent on harassing and abusing her. And that's another thing that we should probably dive into before we're done here, Mike. Like, our thoughts. Right. Like, if this is true, is this a unbelievably hateful, evil, spiteful spirit, or is it demonic in nature? That's another thing to kind of look into. Is this a true story? Plain and simple. Investigators claim to have witnessed firsthand strange phenomena.
Yeah, as soon as they got there.
As soon as they got there, that absolutely convinced them something was absolutely, going on.
Yeah. What I find interesting.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead, Mike. What do you find interesting?
What I find interesting about the investigative team that came in, they actually had called in DeFelita there, and he was actually there experiencing this stuff before he wrote the book.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the movie came out. But, was there, I don't know, does that make it kind of strange that, he was there? Did he really experience this, or was he collaborating to make this freaky ass book making a movie? Yeah. Well, it's like Amityville Horror, same thing that they, when you think, the entity versus Amityville Horror, it's kind of the same controversial things that are going on. And, you just, yes or no, either you believe it or you don't.
And, the Amityville Horror was such a ginormous financial success.
Right.
I mean, the entity, the producers of the entity, they want that financial success as well.
Yeah.
It was released a few years after Amityville came out. So, again, you have to throw those questions out there. We're not saying that we buy into this being a hoax by any means, but we're not saying we buy into it being legit. That's why we're here. That's why we're talking about.
Exactly. And also the fact that, when she did move out of the house and the family moved out, and the next family that lived there, they said, well, the ghost must have went with her because nothing has happened to the next family that lived there. And, which is possible, it said that after she moved, the things continued to happen to her, does that say it is fake and nothing happened and the next family is just experiencing, a normal house? And, it's possible that it was an attachment and this evil, whatever it was, followed her and continued to do it. That means that she's haunted, not the house,
Very well said. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Which is another story in and of itself. The idea of human beings being haunted.
I believe that's very possible.
Yeah, no, I tend to side with you on that one, Mike. A little background on Doris. Doris had moved to California with her family around the age of 10. Very little is known about her early life, but by the time Doris had spoke with the investigators in 1974, it's safe to say that her personal life was falling apart. Bither was a single mom in her 30s, 4 children, 1 girl and 3 boys, by 4 different fathers. She was an alcoholic and suffered from serious emotional problems. Now, right there, a lot of the, let's just call it as is, some of the extra jerky pseudo-skeptics would stop you right there and say,
oh, absolutely.
See, she had emotional problems. See, she was an alcoholic. See,
right.
This all in her head. End of story.
Exactly.
Yeah, that,
but,
that
you know, kind what
of bugs me a bit.
Because of all these issues that she had, did that, make her think that these were going on or made up things? Or because of those issues that she had and the emotional things that she was going through, could that have brought this on to her as well? you know, like, you know, when she was younger with the Ouija board and everything. And a fun, interesting side note, in her early years, where she lived in Aroostook County, Maine, which is, when I lived in Maine, it's the same county that I lived in. Very interesting.
Holy Hannah.
So, yeah.
That's always about Mike, isn't it?
Hey, I'm not talking about anything physical about me. It's just something that it's a fun fact. Side note.
A fun fact to no one except Mike.
I thought it was interesting. But, you know, it's cool. You know, a neat thing. Anyway. He laughs at me.
Well, I just think it's funny. That's cool. I'm teasing. I'm totally teasing.
I know.
Returning to Doris's story here. Doris appears to have endured one abusive relationship after another, likely due to her traumatic childhood. Doris and her children were reportedly being assaulted by a trio of violent entities. Now, one Dr. Taff, who was involved in the investigation, and his associates had serious reservations about Bither's claims, considering her numerous personal problems. However, after considering all factors involved, Dr. Taff decided to visit the Bither home to assess the situation. Now, this is where we get into a little bit of the investigation. Doris moved from Santa Monica into this ramshackle house. The address, well, you can find the address if you're interested. I won't say it here. And this move would prove to have repercussions, obviously, that she never saw coming. Soon after, an elderly Mexican woman knocked at her door and warned Doris that the house she'd moved into was evil. Now, that's interesting. We were talking about Doris herself perhaps being haunted, but now we hear the story right away when she moves in that a mysterious woman knocks on her door and says, "Hey, this house ain't good. Proceed with caution."
And did it really happen, or did it add to the dramatic effect? I don't know. Especially since the next family that lived there said there's nothing going on.
Well, right. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, the people who lived at the Sally House, most of the people who lived at the Sally House say nothing happened here, but it's the one family endured however much, you know, so does it depend? Who knows?
Yeah, and you know, when you were talking about the three entities that actually, you know, she said there was two smaller ones that would hold her down and hold her, and while the other one did what he did, and the boys, the sons, they saw the ghost of the old man.
They saw that, yeah.
Yeah, so many times that they just referred to him as Mr. Who's It.
Oh, that's creepy.
So, yeah.
I don't like that.
One of her sons claimed to have seen Doris being thrown around the room by an invisible phenomenon. He claims that he tried, it's in the way.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, but anyway,
no, there's an ad came up on my other computer that I can't read the whole thing. But anyway, you know, you get the gist of it anyway. So,
according to the journals kept by one Javier Ortega, the woman told Doris, quote, "You need to get out. I used to live here in this old house back when it was just a farm and I was a little girl. There is something very evil here. This place is haunted and you need to get out." So again, now getting to the Ouija board possibly having an effect on this. It's said that Doris's son, Brian, has related that his mother started experimenting with a Ouija board and held seances in her early years and would later mix this activity with drugs and alcohol.
Well, there's a bad combination.
Not a good combination. It is apparent she was battling personal demons. May not have been only self-medicating, but searching for answers from the spirit world. Now, you get that. I mean, sometimes when people are absolutely at their bottom rung, you know, as crazy as it sounds, maybe I can get an answer.
Yeah, out of desperation.
From this Ouija board. Out of desperation. Perfect way of saying it, yes.
Yeah.
Obviously, though, what transpired did little to relieve Doris's emotional state, mental turmoil, that basically drove her to the limits of sanity. Now, it's said that her dabbling with the Ouija board may have provoked an actual response. Doris was reportedly attacked and raped by a violent entity. Her children are also party to the events in her home. She was beaten, again, allegedly beaten, thrown around, sexually assaulted, sometimes, as Mike mentioned, in full view of her children, who could see the entities who were inflicting their violence upon their mother. Gosh, how awful would that have been? How awful. Brian also related that living in the home was hell and that all family members were actually attacked. They were pushed, bitten, and scratched. Some of the classic the demonic haunting signs right there. Brian believed there were four entities in the home, but they concentrated mostly on Doris because of the fear that she was in. Now, that's interesting. Feeding off of the human fear.
Oh, that's I'm sure that's very possible.
I mean, you always hear people, you know, feed from your fear, strengthen yourself from your own fear, you know, use your fear to conquer that what fears you, you know,
sure.
Or that what you fear, I should say. Now, but the opposite is coming from the spirit world, those of a malignant nature, malevolent nature, feeding off of that fear, though, feeding it off of it because maybe it is a weakness at that point. Is that a possibility?
Sure. Absolutely. That's, you know, where they, you know, where any spirit can get a ghost can get some energy out of.
The apparitions were described as appearing humanoid, but foggy.
Right.
I think that's kind of how the movie The Entity portrayed them. I think that it was like a dark, misty, if I'm recalling correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like a shadow person, but I could be totally wrong on that.
Yeah, more misty, though, than a shadow person.
Misty, yeah. Shapes could be seen, but facial features could not. Not always, I should say. Testimony from both Doris and her children, though some might have been convincing, events as witnessed by researchers were far more compelling and harder to dismiss, along with Dr. Barry Taft, Carrie Gaynor, and Dr. Thelma Moss. Those were some involved in the investigation. According to Dr. Barry Taft and her sons, Doris had experienced paranormal phenomena prior to moving into this rundown house, but events escalated when she moved into the condemned Culver City home.
It was a mess when the investigators got there. I mean, dirty mess, like stuff all over the place and not cleaned up, and the kitchen like just full of dirty dishes and just bad.
That was condemned.
Yep.
It was merely a chance encounter that I'm sorry, Mike. It was merely a chance encounter at a California bookstore in 1974 that would eventually reveal one of the most terrifying hauntings in American history. That's what we're talking about right now. Neither was the woman at the bookstore who overheard two men discussing a haunted house and approached them to say that her house was also haunted. Although unknown to Doris at the time, one of the men was the aforementioned Carrie Gaynor, who was a paranormal researcher and associate of Dr. Barry Taft, both from UCLA. It was in August 1974 when Dr. Taft and Gaynor arrived at the Bither home. Upon entering the house, Dr. Taft was greeted by a totally chaotic situation. As Mike mentioned, the home reeks of rotten garbage. Dirty dishes were piled high in the sink. The house was filthy.
Rotten.
Filthy rotten. It was obvious that Doris was not able to perform her role.
Or she didn't want to. Children. Maybe she was lazy. Maybe she's just lazy and the kids wouldn't pitch in. Teenagers.
You're title of the podcast. Yeah. That's what I'll title the podcast. The Case of the Lazy Doris Bither.
Yeah. And what happened afterwards?
And I'm kidding.
I know.
Doris unfortunately passed away like 25 years ago almost. I mean, it's very, very sad. What a sad ending to a sad life.
She would have been a great
life.
She would have been a great guest for the show, that's for sure.
Oh, I know.
Or even one of her sons. Let's check that out. Anyway, go ahead.
Now, considering that Doris had actually asked for help with puzzle Dr. Taft, I'm sorry. The most was that Doris was being very uncooperative. Without her help, the investigation simply had to come to a halt. However, Doris's attitude would soon change. Phone call was made to Dr. Taft's office saying that things had gotten much much worse and that she needed help fast. It was over the course of several months that investigators attempted to document the claims of Doris and her family. It is believed that there were four manifestations in the home that were responsible for an array of paranormal phenomena. One of them, which was seen on a regular basis by all family members, all of them, that's key right there, all family members claim to have seen this one, appeared as an old man, Mike mentioned earlier, and seems to have been harmless. The ghost of the old man was seen often, so often that, as Mike said, the children named him, what did they call him, Mike?
Mr. Who's It?
Mr. Who's It?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
The family believed that Mr. Who's It was the spirit of the children's recently deceased grandfather. Had all the apparitions in the Bitter home been so friendly, well, then we probably wouldn't be talking about this case right now.
Maybe he was there to kind of watch over things and maybe keep things at a lower level of intensity, which
trying
probably would seem, seems, yeah, trying, didn't seem to work.
Well, phenomena observed in the home included many instances of the type of activity commonly reported in haunted cases. The home seemed to have reached a state of infestation, easy for me to say, as the activity was nearly unrelenting. They're believing the house was maybe infested.
Yeah, we had rats in the basement at one time, infested with, but yeah, but they were taken care of. Exterminator. That just drops his head and shakes his head like, I'm such a disappointment to him. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, hardly. Some of these alleged occurrences include levitating pots and pans. Yikes. Strange, terrifying sounds and smells, as well as objects thrown about by unseen forces. Very heavily in the poltergeist reign right there.
Very much so.
Poltergeist activity, that is. Perhaps the most disturbing aspect of Doris's case, however, was not the usual poltergeist-type activity, as we will soon see, as these spirits soon began physically attacking the family. It was believed that three malevolent entities were in the home and were aggressive towards all family members. Doris, obviously, however, was the one who seemed to be the target of the most violent assaults. However, the paranormal activities were strongest when Doris herself was present in the home. While the children were pushed and on occasion thrown, it was Doris that claimed that one of the entities, the largest one, was sexually assaulting her as the two others held her down. Mike mentioned that earlier. Now, this may seem hard to believe. Had there not been witnesses? Well, no one saw the entity. Witnesses did see Doris attacked by that invisible force that punched and slapped her, threw her up against the wall as if phantom hands were grabbing. Doris also displayed common injuries known to rape victims. Now go ahead.
You know, when you're talking about she was seen being beaten and everything, her oldest son, Brian Harris, claims to have, that he's witnessed many attacks. I'll read this here real quick. He says that because his bedroom was next door to his mother's room, he would have to listen to the assaults as they happened. And in a few cases, he actually saw her being beaten by an invisible force. It was like if a man was standing in front of my mother and would start to beat her. Imagine a woman being beaten. You could see her being picked up and thrown around, sounds, slaps, but there was no one there to actually do it. He continued, he felt it too, pulling, biting, and scratching, and they were all attacked.
Oh, God. Terrifying.
Right.
I can't imagine. Now, as the investigation did continue, Dr. Taff organized a group of paranormal investigators as well as professional photographers and camera operators to go to Doris's home and attempt to document the case. We mentioned this earlier. After a period of time had passed and nothing appeared to have happened, Dr. Taff suggested that Doris yell at the unseen entities to try to provoke them, pull out her inner Zach Bagans.
Yeah.
Well, before little Zach was on this planet Earth.
I've got demons running all through me.
You got demons. As all looked on, all paranormal investigators, all family members, as all continued to look on, a green mist began to form in the room. Not long after, a figure could be seen in the mist, becoming more dense as time passed. Terrifying. It was described as being a large human torso, very muscular, without any other features such as arms or legs. It is perhaps not surprising that when the film from numerous cameras was examined, there was little to see, as is often the case. Of course it is, with paranormal activity. The only photograph of interest is one of Doris sitting on her bed with a strange arc of light showing over her head. The light could not have been created by the lighting in the room and is actually above Doris, not on the wall, as it does not bend with the corner of the room. So it picked up some sort of light anomaly passing through, moving perhaps, because it just doesn't fit with the shape of the house. Now, despite leaving the house, Doris claimed that the entities followed her every time she and her family members moved. Doris claimed to have even become pregnant due to the spectral rapes. The medical tests showed that she was suffering from an ectopic pregnancy. After the late 80s, Doris and her family were not heard, seen from. Family seemed to disappear from the spotlight. But I suppose a return to normal life. As we mentioned, Doris unfortunately passed away in 1999. Mike.
Yes.
Terrifying case. Terrifying. Oh, awful.
Absolutely terrifying.
Now, what do you think? What's your vibe? We have a few more minutes before we take our second break here, our final time traveling excursion, before we return to wrap up our thoughts on this case. And Mike's got some ponderables, and I've got some moments of the macabre. Anything you want to add, Mike, before we take our break? Okay, I'll tell you what. We'll save that for when we return, okay?
Yes.
So, Mike, do not go and beaten anything again during this this time-traveling excursion, okay?
Okay.
Wrap up your thoughts in a concise manner, and we shall tackle them. And we'll dive into those ponderables and some moments of the macabre. Sound good?
Yes, ponderables, quotes, and a little bit of risque riddles.
Oh, risque riddles even. Nice.
There is.
Looking forward to that one. Sounds good, my friend. I'll hold on. We shall return after another brief time traveling excursion. This will be seamless. And we have returned from yet another successful time traveling excursion, the final time traveling excursion for this episode. Again, Sunday, April 14th, 2024. Mike, this has been a good meet and greet for you and I. Again, seems like it's been forever, but man, what a terrifying case to discuss.
It is.
I mean, what do you think? What is your vibe? I always ask this.
Yes, you do. And that's good. Extremely terrifying. The story, the movie. I haven't read the book, but I'm sure it's more terrifying than you could imagine. But is it real? I think there's some real things to it. Was there some kind of embellishment from the family to make it more of a, oh, this is a big thing, we need help? But, you know, a lot of people did experience these things, the investigators and stuff. But if you take it as all these people that have experienced these things and are testifying that this happened, you know, there's definitely something to it. Something went on. You know, she was attacked. The children were attacked. But to what degree, really? You know, who knows? Hopefully it wasn't as bad as what you see in the movie or what they say. Because I couldn't live through something like that. It would be so difficult.
I totally agree with you 100%. And again, when I asked this question of you, in no way am I suggesting this is what happened, but we have to throw this out there.
Exactly.
Do you think that it's possible that, I know this sounds cliched and almost disrespectful, but somehow due to her emotional state, due to the abusive childhood she is alleged to have gone through, Do you think it's possible she somehow is doing this to herself? Is this some sort of mental conjuring? It has nothing paranormal in nature. Is that even a fathom of reality to you? That she is haunting herself, so to speak. I mean, you have to ask that question.
Absolutely. You know, I know that that can happen just from the thoughts and the energy that you have. And if you have that much emotional trauma and you're so in such a state, I absolutely think that that can bring on something that, you know, and as a part of her doing it to herself, is she doing it to herself without knowing, I would imagine, you know, if this stuff is really going on. So, yeah, I think that's a possibility. And a good reason why when she left the house, the next people are saying that there's nothing there. It's just her. So, yeah.
Right. Again, just to be clear, we are not suggesting that is what happened here. Not by any means.
Well, we don't know how anything of this story. We just know what we read and what we've researched, and it's up to everybody to decide, you know, if they think it's real or not.
Yeah. So. Yep. Absolutely. We have an open mind to everything, and it's, we went there. We only know what we can research. We only know what we basically shared with you guys here tonight in a brief Cliff's Notes version, I guess. But my vibe on this overall is, I mean, it's a sad story overall.
Yeah, it is.
There's no way around that one. What is the root cause of the supposed paranormal activity? I believe in malevolent spirits. I believe that there are asshole ghosts out there. I mean, an asshole is putting it lightly. I believe in the possibility of this being demonic in nature. I mean, my gosh, the violence involved in this.
It very much seems like a demonic presence.
You know, I believe this could be totally fabricated via the movie directors, the movie producers, the script. But didn't the movie suggest that this entity that was assaulting her was like a jilted ex-lover?
Mm.
Wasn't that something that was kind of suggested in that? Someone who she knew in life that had passed on?
I don't remember that, but it's possible.
It's possible, yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, listeners. I could very well be wrong, but for some reason that's popping into my little noggin right now. But yeah, overall, just a sad story, paranormal or not, you know. And I'm leaning towards it being possibly real, and I'm leaning towards it. It's just when you have family members who are so convinced, you have witnesses, paranormal investigators who claim to have experienced phenomena that they can't explain. You can't dismiss that.
No, you can't. Yeah, in the movie also, you remember the scene, well, it was closer to the end of the movie, I believe, where they're scientifically testing her and trying to figure out if it's, you know, if they can scientifically or actually see what's going on. And they had her locked in a clear big box with a bed in it, and she could sleep see if that thing, those things happened while people are watching or recording, whatever. And if I remember right, it actually did happen where she was attacked in that.
Yeah. I'm picturing a very, very, climactic few minutes of that scene. You know, there was kind of like in a lab setting, like you said. And why am I visioning like lightning bolts in that scene or something? I'm remembering blue lights.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the big black misty thing, I got to say something here. Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
I got to say something here as my dog barks. But anyway, I was sitting here listening to you, and I thought one of my dogs walked up to me, or the shepherd, mostly because she's black and it's dark and I couldn't see. And I felt something push on my left upper leg on the side. And I thought one of the dogs was there and pushed on me, and I looked right away, and there's nothing.
There's no one there?
Nothing was there, but it definitely pushed, and I know the exact spot. I felt it pushed in.
Uh-huh.
It was interesting.
Did the ghost cat jump on your lap?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Oh, that's Mishka.
Cool. I like those type of seemingly mundane experiences, you know, but they add up. They all are something.
Absolutely. Oh, and another thing. The other night, well, I don't know if you've noticed it, by our front door, there's this iron hand-wrought fire poker. It's really nice. Yeah. And I actually watched it being made. But the other night, we were sitting on the couch watching TV, and I looked up, and I noticed that thing was swinging like crazy back and forth.
What?
Yeah, it really? Was. That was weird. And I actually think that I seen it speed up for a little bit while I was watching it before it slowed down and stopped.
No kidding.
No kidding. That's not a joke. And Mary and I both witnessed that. So
casual experience in Mike's yeah. paranormal life.
Man. Yeah, I loved it.
Mike, are you ready for a brief moment of the macabre?
Yeah, the macabre. Let's see.
And then we'll fire into some ponderables before signing off for the day. Sound good?
Sounds good.
This is the brief story of one Octavia Hatcher. Does that name ring a bell?
No, but it's quite an interesting name.
Yeah, I like the name Octavia. I like that name.
It's something to do with eight, I think.
The story of Octavia Hatcher is actually quite a popular one around the small town of Pikeville, Kentucky. The legend of Octavia Hatcher states that the young mother fell sick and passed away a few months after she gave birth to a son, who also died shortly after being delivered. Very sad. Mm-hmm. Now, due to the southern heat, her body was buried very quickly.
You know, no refrigeration.
no means. I mean, out of fear of very fast decomposing.
They could have put her on blocks of ice.
Well, anyway. Anything else you want to complain about? This poor lady's story.
Oh, yeah. She's dead. I shouldn't.
Far worse here.
I do not poke fun anymore. Go ahead.
Well, as I said, the legend states that she fell sick and died a few months after she gave birth to a son who also died right after delivery. Now, due to the southern heat, they buried her body was buried very quickly. Soon after her death, however, other locals in the Pikeville, Kentucky area seemingly showed similar symptoms of illness, similar to the ones that Octavia was experiencing. But they, however, soon recovered.
Mm.
The culprit, retrospectively, upon looking back, was likely encephalitis.
My grandfather's brother died of encephalitis.
Oh, really?
Yes, he did.
Man. Now, locals promptly dug up Hatcher's grave and realized that she didn't, in fact, die.
Ah.
But had fallen into a deep coma.
Uh-huh. And then woke up.
She woke up. They found evidence of Octavia having woken up underground, including scratches on the coffin, and also blood underneath Hatcher's fingernails.
I would think that her fingernails probably would have torn off.
Right, exactly. Now, the veracity of the story has been questioned, to be fair, but according to a member of Big Sandy Heritage Center's board of directors, most local historians do agree that Octavia Hatcher did fall ill and was, in fact, buried alive. The story of one Octavia Hatcher, God rest her soul, how awful.
Yeah.
She falls sick. And they're like, oh, she's dead. Bury her. It's hot out.
Yeah.
And she wakes up.
This must have happened a long time ago. years.
Hey, let me see if I can find a quick year. But while you're talking, I'll search up the date.
Back then there must have been a lot of people that, or not a lot, but people that have been or been afraid that they were going to be buried alive, and that's when they started doing these many different inventions of where you can ring a bell as a string that goes down to the some ways of alerting somebody that you're alive down there, and that was a real thing.
Hence the phrase "saved by the bell." That's true.
That is very true. Yeah, and they made a really, really bad TV series out of that.
Hey, but don't knock "Saved by the Bell."
Come on, whatever.
Zach Morris is a hero to many.
Yeah, I bet.
Mike, this took place in 1891. Octavia was 20 years old. Says she, quote unquote, died on May 2nd after she had sank into a long depression and then fell into a coma.
Crazy.
My God. Any whoozle, how's that for your moment of the macabre? Some haphazard horror right there. Oh, that's such a fear, Mike. The fear of being buried alive. Good God Almighty.
I want to hear your thoughts on, okay, if that happened to you and all of a sudden you wake up.
No.
And you're in pitch dark blackness. You can't see anything blacker than black. And then you try to move or get up, and then you find that you're encased in this whatever, because you don't know what's going on.
Why are you doing this? Just stop.
You know, I'm sure somebody would have thought that they died and went to hell.
The terror. Exactly. Oh,
thinking about just the claustrophobic thoughts oh my God.
Yeah. And knowing that you're dead, are dead now. A slow suffocation.
Yeah. Well, you know,
your only hope is that maybe you have a heart attack out of fear and your suffering has ended, you know, but oh my God.
Start tearing at your jugular vein, hoping to rip it open and die quickly. You know,
you got some ponderables here, my friend, to get our thoughts off of this.
Yeah. But I was going to say, though.
Oh my God, he's not done. He's not done. You know,
there must have been a lot of people that were afraid of this. And also, you know, when they had to exhume bodies for whatever reason, they did do that. They would notice that their fingernails looked like they kept growing and their hair kept growing. And they thought, they were alive. But the thing is that happens when you start to decompose and you're, you know.
Yes.
And they thought, they were alive and they, you know, buried alive. And yeah, that could be where this, you know, these bells started coming up and, you know, just frightening. Ponderables.
The one well-known story where the individual was dug up after being buried alive, and they buried him for some reason with a pen and paper, and he had written an entire note saying, "Souls." And then the pencil pen just slowly starts making scribble marks. And
what did he say?
Right. Nothing. It's fictional. It was fictional. I was being facetious.
Oh, I thought it was a true story. God, the Lord. No. Boy, that was good. You had your poker face on for that.
I did.
Oofta.
All right, Mike, let's get some risque riddles and some ponderables.
Ponderables, quotes, and a little bit of risque riddles coming your way now. We should have music for this.
I know, but I'm not messing with what we have working now.
Yeah, it's not going to be that good enough for that anyway.
Hopefully, the next time we get around here, boys and girls, the audio will be much better, but we shall see. I'm still struggling.
Either the audio will be better, or Patrick will have died from frustration and anger
with my own note pierced on my scalp saying audio was the death of Patrick Goffenberg, seeing gods to blame.
And the pencil line slowly fades away.
Slowly fades away. Yes. Whimper, whimper, sniffle, sniffle.
But I gotta, you know, ponder this, my friends. If a tin whistle is made of tin, what is a foghorn made of? Ponder. This is not a good one, Patrick says. Okay, I got a question for you then, Patrick.
I didn't say anything.
Well, I saw the look on your face and that little grunt you made. But, Patrick, what disease does cured ham actually have? I mean, what?
Okay, that one's okay.
All right, if Jimmy cracked corn and no one cares, why the hell is there a stupid song about him? Ponder.
Yeah, I like that one. That was pretty good. That's true. Why do people bother taking the time to write a song if no one cared? No one gave a shit about Jimmy cracking corn.
Yeah. But I changed the words a little bit. And I usually say this when I'm going to the bathroom. I say, Jimmy crapped corn and I don't care.
Thank you for sharing corn that.
I don't do that.
No, sure you don't.
No, I don't. But if people from Poland are called Poles, which they are people from Holland called Holes? Ponder.
That's very good.
One a little bit. I got a little chuckle.
Yeah, I got a little chuckle out of that one. Yeah.
Got a lot of moans from the listeners, but. But okay, ponder this. Is it okay? And I may have said this one before. If I have said any of these before, please forgive me because my memory only goes back so far. But is it okay to shoot tourists during tourist season? Ponder. And, that would fit in your neck of the woods. I remember when I lived there, the summers, you cannot take right turns. You have to always go left.
And I will say this as just one example. I mean, this is a innocuous, harmless example. This is on the scale of annoyances. It doesn't even register, but it's still memorable for me. I remember waiting in line at probably my favorite restaurant here in town in the summer. I was waiting to be checked in. A couple walked behind me. They could not believe that they had to wait to be seated. And the lady, or the wife, whatever she was, I'll never forget this quote. She says, "I cannot believe this. We come here every summer."
So they're special and they should be moved ahead a little bit.
They're special. They couldn't believe that they had to wait.
They were probably from North Dakota. I don't know. But you know what restaurant was that, by the way?
It used to be called Companeros and now it is it used to be called Compadres and now it's Companeros.
Right. Yeah, after it burned down.
Yes. No, I love that place.
Oh, that was a terrible, terrible thing.
Very terrible. Ugh. But it survived. I mean, the building was refurbished. Yep. It's better than it was as far as space goes.
Yes, that was one of my favorite places, too. I got to go back there someday. I got to take Mary there sometime.
Absolutely.
But if one synchronized swimmer, you know, the synchronized swimming.
Oh, yeah.
If one synchronized swimmer drowns, do the rest have to drown as well? Ponder.
God damn it. Why the hell did Billy drown? Shit.
We lost the whole team.
We didn't rehearse this.
Okay. All of a sudden, it's just bodies floating in the water. Randomly, no synchronization whatsoever.
Yep. Very original, very unique.
If ghosts can walk through walls, why don't they fall through the floor? Ponder. That one's kind of bad.
Yeah,
now you tell. Okay. But ponder this. Why isn't there mouse flavored cat food?
Hey, that's actually a good one. That's a good one. Well, PETA wouldn't allow that for sure. That's kind of cruel and morbid.
Possibly
mouse flavored cat food.
Well, you think they would enjoy that? But Patrick, ponder this: do burn victims get a discount at a crematorium? Ponder. Except now,
that's just terrible. That's wrong. Yep, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah. The next one I'm just going to skip because it's really stupid.
You should have skipped the last one.
Oh, no. Well, how about this one? Do infants enjoy infancy as much as adults enjoy adultery? Ponder.
Yeah. See, that was almost a risque one. Yeah. That's almost the risque riddle type thing.
It is. Yeah, close, but not quite. But
you have some risque riddles?
I do.
Risque riddles?
I have some.
Let's hear it.
If you ate pasta and antipasta at the same time, would you still be hungry? Ponder. Okay.
Riddles.
Oh, you want me to go to that? Okay.
Yeah.
But
we're running short on time.
Is the reason Santa is so jolly, is it because he knows where all the bad girls are? Ponder. Anyway. Da-da-da-da. Okay, let's see here. Let's get my note. Oh, where are we going? Okay, risque riddles.
Mike's lost, everybody.
I have a plethora of them.
Ooh.
Okay. What starts with a P and ends with O-R-N?
I'll let you answer your own question. What is it?
In the film industry, by the way. It's popcorn. She said that's stupid. Oh, I didn't like that one.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. What's beautiful and natural but gets prickly if it isn't trimmed regularly? Ponder that one.
Oh, man. Okay, what's the answer? I'm not even fathoming a guess.
The lawn. stupid. All right. I'll check this one out. What's made of rubber and handed out at some schools, and it exists to prevent mistakes?
Well, the obvious answer isn't the obvious answer. So what is it?
Erasers. What else would it be? Oh,
yeah, we all have filthy minds, don't we?
Okay. Now here we go with this. Listeners, listen. And Patrick. What's white, sticky, and better to spit out than swallow?
Good God Almighty, what?
Toothpaste. Easy.
I feel like you've done that one before. That one sounds familiar.
I don't think so. I could have, and I could have totally forgotten. But check this out. What is the most popular guy at a nudist colony?
The most popular guy at a nudist colony would be... Now,
I really want you to think of this.
The most popular guy at a nudist colony.
Yes.
Well, my filthy mind is going to the most well-endowed, but what is the correct answer?
Well, you're kind of close. It is the guy that can carry a cup of coffee in each hand, plus a dozen donuts.
Wow. That's very specific.
That's kind of risque.
A little risque.
Yeah.
Okay. Pick your favorite one to wrap up with here.
To wrap it up? Ooh, probably would have been the next one. I've only got a couple left, actually. How do you make 5 pounds of fat look good? It's simple. 5 pounds of fat. How do you make it look good?
How?
No idea. You put a nipple on it. That's funny. That is funny.
God. 5 pounds.
Well, you know, big knockers. I, What knockers?
Way to be subtle. Yeah, I got you.
But risque. Okay.
Great young Frankenstein quote.
Yes, I got just two more. What's long and hard when it's young and soft and small when it's old? Mary got a laugh out of that. You know, Mary, okay, what it is? It's a candle. Nothing dirty.
Yeah, it also ceases to exist.
Exactly. Okay, now here's the last one, and it's a good one to finish on.
Okay, sounds good.
I'm going to be saying it as if I am. I go in hard, come out soft, and you love to blow me. What is it? What am I?
I'm not even going to try and guess. I just give it to me.
It's the simplest answer. Bubble gum. Oh, jeez, that's stupid too. But it was,
Well, you started off with a B plus, and you ended up with a B minus. How's that?
Yeah, I know. You
flirted with an A minus for a while there, but then you plummeted towards the end.
I'm not.
Well, that's okay.
I'm not happy with myself.
Well, hopefully our listeners are happy with both of us, Mike. Hopefully the audio isn't too unbearable, and hopefully we'll be back soon.
Do you want some funny quotes? Do we have time?
I don't want anything.
Oh,
give me one funny quote. One funny quote.
Okay. Where is that one? I told my wife the truth. I told her I was seeing a psychiatrist. Then she told me the truth, that she was seeing a psychiatrist, two plumbers, and a bartender. Who said that? Whose quote is that?
That sounds like a Rodney Dangerfield quote.
Absolutely, it's a Rodney Dangerfield quote. You got it. Ding, 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 ding.
Perfect. I want to end on that. I like having a correct answer. So yes. Don't ask anymore.
Okay, I got plenty for the next whatever we do.
That's a great idea.
People will be disappointed in.
Way to sell it again.
B minus.
Well, Mike, if you're up for it, let's plan on some Patreon exclusive episodes next weekend, and yes, let's make them good.
They will be good.
Yeah, we just recorded a couple weeks ago now, we recorded our 70th, yes, 70th exclusive Patreon episode, and
really?
More and more are soon to come. We're closing in on almost 400 exclusive posts for our Patreon page. That's a lot of stuff that you can't find anywhere else. So if you made it through this episode and you want to support the podcast, check it out. You can sign up for as little as $1 a month. No obligations. You don't like it, you can leave.
If we could make it for 50 cents, we would. But we can't.
But we'd appreciate if you guys gave it a shot. We love all you guys. Thank you all for tuning in. Mike, until next time, my friend. What do our friends of the podcast need to do?
Peace out.